When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
This is how it's always been. I'm on the outside looking in. Welcome to Double Love, the podcast in which we explore the strange and terrifying world of Sweet Valley High, book by book. I'm Anna Carey.
I'm Karen Moynihan.
And it's Christmas.
Oh, hooray.
We've got the jingle bells.
It's time. Jingle bells. And also.
Oh, no.
Cans.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Can malfunction.
This is a tragedy. Can malfunctioning. No. Oh, I've got it.
She did it.
It didn't make a satisfying, nice, hissy, popping sound.
No,
but
I think mine did, though. So
it did.
That's all that matters. Mine worked fine.
Very Jessica of you, Karen.
I'm being possessed by the spirit of Jessica.
That's the ghost of Christmas Evil Twin for
Absolutely.
You.
Oh, my God.
Well, yes, we are here with our small bag of cans for a very special Christmas episode. Now, apologies to everybody who was looking forward to the arrival of Nora, but she will return. I guess.
She'll both turn up and return. It's all going to be fine. Don't worry.
Yes. In 2024. Mm-hmm. Early in 2024. So in the meantime, we're going to take a little trip down memory lane.
A best of, if you will. That's not actually a clip show because that can be misleading sometimes.
Yes.
When things are titled Best of 23. It's like, oh, this is nothing new.
I know. And also, you know, you don't necessarily, you could go back and listen to all these episodes if you really want to. So we did ask you on social media, and we asked our Pi Beta Alpha siblings, what were your favourite moments in the podcast and the books this year?
Mm-hmm.
Now, bear in mind, the Margot era did finish last Christmas.
She just made such a good impression on everybody that it's like, she's still in there lasting, I think. Yes. Just like, that couldn't have been a year ago.
Oh, it is. Some people did point out that it did, like Jeremy took up about half of this year.
God. I actually feel sick.
Yeah. So, yes, he will be mentioned today. But not, you won't have to listen to him being a perv.
No, that's true.
In fact, we're going to start out with a different sort of romance. And it is the famous, or should I say infamous, kitchen in the Casa that shocked the world.
Or certainly us anyway.
Liz and Bruce.
Oh my God. I just think it's so funny that she's had two very sexy moments in the Casa kitchen, neither of which were with Todd.
Who was the other one?
Ken.
Oh my God, of course.
You mean it's not burned into your brain like it is in mine?
Strangely enough, no. But yeah, I forgot about the secret diary.
Yeah, she's at the full height of her kissing powers in that kitchen, it seems like.
It's the Spanish child's.
That's what it'll do.
It's the only explanation for it. But yeah, it was very saucy.
It was.
Like her and Bruce were saying, I just want to go wild. I don't want to think about anything. I just want to. She stumbled to a stop, unable to find the right words. To live, Bruce suggested.
Oh my God.
Elizabeth's eyes shone. Yes, to live. And then they waffle on about their parents for a while. And then suddenly Elizabeth realized with a start that she was holding Bruce Patman in her arms and that they were both wearing next to nothing.
Oh my God. So spicy.
Lest we forget, everybody, she's wearing a sarong.
That's true, because it's a pool party, isn't it?
It was.
Like, this is a party where, like, everyone's there milling around and they are in the kitchen.
In the kitchen. I mean, it's not a surprise they were discovered.
No.
But it was quite hilariously passionate because, first of all, he kisses her, well, on the neck, but then on the mouth. And we're told, Bruce, Elizabeth gasped, too surprised to pull away. Bruce's mouth had found hers. He kissed her passionately over and over. Bruce, she said again, but this time her voice was low and eager.
Oh, I was going to say you were putting some kind of shine on that, but no, this was all in the text.
Yeah? It was in the text. I'm not interpreting it in any way.
No editorializing needed.
And then, of course, poor old Tottles comes in. And Liz, it seemed to take forever for Elizabeth to straighten her sarong.
Oh my God, the indecency.
Like, where were Bruce's hands?
Holy shit.
Jeez.
I mean,
that sarong was around the waist.
I mean, there you go. And they were, yeah, there was nowhere to hide those hands either. It's not like they're down anyone's jeans or anything. Everyone's in swimwear.
But of course, this was not the only time Liz was unfaithful to Todd in 2023. In fact, when was she not?
Oh, look it.
Just astonishing.
It's crazy. And it's so funny how they're always held up as like the couple that everybody roots for and everyone loves them. And Enda's always like, oh, you and Todd are made for each other. Like, everyone in Sweet Valley is convinced that they're like this perfect match. And Liz has not kept it in her pants a single time that she's been out of that town.
Yes. Like,
as soon as she leaves Sweet Valley.
Oh,
she's a mad woman.
Out of sight, out of mind for Todd.
100%.
Like, she was, she of course had Bruce. In fact, actually, that wasn't even, he wasn't even out of town.
He was literally in her kitchen.
He was in the house. But then, of course, there was Luke. Now, we'll have more about that later. But what is hilarious is that in the books that we are now covering, the cheerleading ones, she's like, oh my God, I feel so guilty about Todd. I was like, you did not feel a second of guilt while you were cavorting with
him.
Oh
my God. In London, it was literally Todd who, he would ring her and she'd be like, oh shit, yeah, that guy.
Oh, I have a boyfriend.
I guess. How annoying.
So yeah, it is quite astonishing how, like, ridiculously cheesy she is. She almost cheats more than Jessica, because at least Jessica's kind of just playing the
field.
Do you
know what? That's true. And in fact, like, because I'm trying to think, I suppose Jessica's like serious boyfriends, like AJ, she didn't cheat. Was that the two-boy
weekend?
Oh, there was
a two-boy weekend. So
yeah,
she did.
Okay, she did. But with Sam.
No, definitely
she didn't cheat, but there was a bit of messing around with the soap star guy.
That was true.
But
yeah,
didn't kiss her or anything. She was just kind of spending a lot of time with him.
Going for dates with him to sort of Hollywood soirees.
And that was just her being a, like, fame-hungry bitch.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
More so than actually trying to ditch Sam or anything.
Yeah. And then there was, Black Lightning. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Black Lightning. No justice for that poor man whose name I still cannot remember.
Was it James as well?
It was James. You're right. Oh my God, good recall.
Oh, well, he's, you know, he's burnt into our hearts as the second of her dead boyfriends. There will be more.
There will be more to come. The second in a long line of dead boyfriends.
So, she didn't cheat on him. Mm-mm. And then I guess it's, there was Mick. But he was sort of cheating on her with Lila.
In the boyfriend war, that guy.
Yes.
The sexy windsurfer.
Yeah, with his flowing mane.
Yes, driving all the MILFs crazy.
So I don't know if it counts if...
No, that was just kind of her like holiday fling, but she wasn't actually with anybody.
No.
Then.
And then, of course, little Lord Pembroke.
Oh my God.
The hottest man she had ever seen.
In an ascot, no less. Just like all the 90s teens were doing.
Well, was he a teen? That was the worrying question.
Oh God, yeah. Did we ever find out what age he actually was?
I think he was definitely like 21 or 22.
Yeah, Jesus.
And didn't he get given like a really fancy job in his dad's empire at the end?
Probably.
Anyway, never mentioned again.
No. Left for dead.
The love of her life. And now we're on Ken. And I can tell you that she does cheat on him.
Oh.
Because that's the high school war.
Oh, okay.
That's when she's cheating.
I feel like there's another dead boyfriend to come in the high school war.
Oh, there
isn't
is. There? A victim, a fallen soldier in the war. I think he drowns in a pool or something.
Jesus.
I can't remember, but he dies in battle.
Dramatic.
So she doesn't at the moment, this era, she hasn't really cheated.
No, she has been faithful to Ken. She hasn't even really looked at anyone else really since she's been with Ken, I feel like.
No. So
it's early days yet, though. Let's just
give her time. But yeah. Liz has been cheating up a storm.
She's such a cheater, and it's so true. It's so funny actually when you say that, because like, yeah, she has cheated way more than Jessica.
100%.
For sure.
And actually, that gave rise to another of our favourite moments, or favourite tropes, I suppose, of this year, which was the fact that she kept proof of her... I mean, she's thinking of it as cheating. We were reminded that that when it happened in the secret diary, it was after she and Todd had actually agreed not to see each other anymore.
And pre-#PoorJeffrey.
Yes. Oh, well.
He has not got a look in this whole time that she's been mooning over Ken. It's like, again, just Left 4 Dead. Like,
just me, Todd, that's it.
That's it. That is all that this has ever concerned.
And that serial killer, of course, but we'll forget about him. But yes, she, as you might recall, she decided to keep one of her mementos.
I mean, keep the memento, fine, but putting it in a frame is so fucking extra. But as we find out, like mother, like daughter.
Yeah, didn't lick it up off the stones, as we say in this part of the world. For who else might you recall framed an image that most people would not frame?
This is the thing, because I feel like we were reading it and it was like, oh my god, and Alice has a framed photo of like her and Hank Patman when they were supposed to be married, and it looks like they've gotten married because they're both in full wedding gear posed in a photo that is now framed. And as everyone pointed out afterwards, why the fuck did she frame that? The wedding never went ahead. What are you doing?
Maybe she just looked really good in that dress.
Maybe.
Like early 70s, late 60s wedding dresses were pretty cool. My parents got married in 71.
Oh,
and, like,
nice.
There's a lot of sort of high-waisted, floor-length A-line sort of dresses with tight sleeves. And they do look pretty good,
I guess.
But even so, would they look good enough that you would go out and go, this man who I jilted at the altar, I really want a memento of that day.
I'm just going to bring this to the frame shop and get them to take care of it and then hide it at the bottom of a trunk in the attic.
With the wedding dress and the bouquet. I will keep all these, like, mementos.
So funny.
Like, where's her actual wedding dress? So that's probably just in a, you know, in a bag, a bin bag somewhere, but a precious Hank.
Still in the dry cleaners.
Oh, well. Those dry cleaners are busy.
They're so busy, man. I mean...
It probably takes about 20 years for them to get round to the whatever's. Oh, that's silk blouses.
They run off their feet, like they just can't keep up.
So yeah, we did enjoy the secret love framing. I guess they were a very dramatic family.
They really are, actually. And it is just so funny that Alice, like, did that and then Liz did the exact same thing. It's like, ooh, secret relationship. Let's get a frame.
Of course. Like, it's not, you know, did it really happen if it's just sitting in an envelope or tucked into a diary?
Doesn't
somewhere?
Count.
So, yeah, we did appreciate the continuity, I guess, even though it was never mentioned. And I don't think they realised how incredibly weird it all was. But it's not the only incredibly weird thing, because a lot of you appreciated the depiction of Foggy Old London Town.
Oh my god, so many people loved that, and just the absolute outrageous amount of scones that were being eaten on that trip by everybody.
So many scones. I'd completely forgotten, probably because I blanked it out until I was looking through notes. And one stage, they have fried eggs with scones.
Oh my god, what are they? No, no.
Like unhinged behaviour.
Oh god, I feel like, I was looking through my notes, and at one point I was like, they're going to get scurvy. Eat a banana or something, for god's sake. They were just constantly eating scones day in, day out.
And a full English every day. And yes, somehow, of course, as usual, keeping their perfect size, six figures, which never fail to remind you is the only size it is acceptable to be. But yes, it wasn't the only thing about London Town. There was a lot of, a lot of slander on the British healthcare system.
That's true. Oh my god.
Princess Elena was going to use her millions to have a clinic where the poor could get free medical treatment, which they already get.
And it's the whole point of the fucking NHS. God damn it.
See, we never, you know, we obviously have our issues with the British establishment, but as we said, that the NHS is an amazing thing, and we will feel weirdly protective of London when defamed by Sweet Valley.
Like, when something is that egregiously wrong, it's like, no. Yeah. Come on now.
Come on. Show this to one person who's even been there on holiday.
Look, I know. Just, and the incessant fog was just too funny. Like,
Oh my God. Like, constant.
Like, genuinely, they have nicer summers than we do. Like, yeah. In London, it's real fucking nice in the summertime.
Also, these sort of pea supers that they used to have in the days of like everybody having coal fires, yeah, and like
constant smog. And
yes, exactly. Yeah. And yes, somehow in 1993 or whatever year it was, they're like trying to walk down the street and, you know, in steamy, foggy, smelly haze.
Couldn't see ahead of you. I did like, actually, Liz Roberts made a great point that she was disappointed that a character from Liverpool didn't say fuck the Tories, not once.
Rightly so. Rightly so. It was, Anne was such a fan of the Royals.
Oh,
like,
it all seems so unlikely. Like, I feel like people from Liverpool are basically Irish in that way.
Kind of are.
You know, and the Brits often claim Irish people and we just claim all of Liverpool to
be honest. Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. I think it's fair.
It's like, yeah, you guys get it.
So yeah, that was the London depiction really did make, you know, the top list in comments,
yeah,
that we got from people.
Like, definitely.
Some people did point out that they had taken it as gospel truth when they first read it.
Yeah, which is fair if you don't know. And, you know, it's not like you can look it up easily in the 90s. So
I mean, for all you know, Sergeant Bumpo being allowed to take underage girls on his on his rounds was perfectly normal behavior.
He's now running Scotland Yard, yeah.
Oh, yes. The Bumpo Beat.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, speaking of the Bumpo Beat, it did give us the amazing concept of Wretched Chinchilla.
I loved it so much. It was such a weird combination of words. And she did it twice, didn't she? That fancy Lady Pembroke, wasn't it?
It was Lady Pembroke, yes. She was given back, didn't they, like, take
she was
given
back the wrong fur
or something,
yeah,
and they gave her
a wretched chinchilla at the hotel. Just fucking fantastic.
Well, of course, a lot of people thought it was a good bad name. And the other thing they thought was a good bad name was Oedipus Werewolf Complex.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God.
Or Oedipal Werewolf Complex, yeah, either will do, but that.
That's a double bill.
Oh my God. What a lineup. I think we'd all go to, what was it called? Like the Pink Elephant or something. No, that was actually a real club in Dublin.
Okay.
The cool club they all went to London town. That had the Royals grooving
at it.
Oh, was
this the underage juice bar or something? Of which there were so many in London.
So many.
To this day, you can't move for underage juice bars.
It's where the teens are rocking out.
Yeah. No fake IDs needed here, guys.
But of course, Luke was was too busy to go to such things. He was too busy obsessing over his mother's werewolf love. I mean, he wasn't the only one with werewolf love. Of course, there was the secret werewolf library. That was a highlight.
Oh, yes, the secret werewolf sex room.
Yes. I don't know. Did sex happen in it?
Oh, I don't know. I think we just decided it probably did.
It had all Lord Pembroke Senior's...
his research.
His research and his wolf heads and his love for Annabelle.
Oh, Annabelle. Oh, my God. Yes. Wasn't she another kind of Victorian doll ghost type?
She had Victorian doll ghost vibes.
Because her letters were like written as if she was like from that time rather than the 80s. Like, that bitch had a perm. Don't you lie to me.
And she had a love child who was like conveniently not named, and teen detective extraordinaire Liz was like, oh, Annabelle. But didn't Luke say his mother was Anne?
Completely different names. There is nothing to look into here. This lead has gone cold.
But of course, that werewolf poetry mother obsessed little freak did give rise to perhaps greatest character in the in 2023. And I'm speaking, of course, the one and only Cookie Monster Werewolf.
Happy Christmas, everybody.
Now, could Cookie Monster Werewolf remind us of his classic?
I'll ask him.
Yes, what do you think, Cookie Monster Werewolf? That was his dialogue from an amazing moment.
Oh God, okay. Oh Jesus, okay.
I believe in you, Cookie Monster Werewolf. You've been away from the airwaves for a while, but I think you can come back.
Okay. Someday I'd get back at the people who hurt her. The people who denied me. There have been so many. So many. But someday I'd get them all.
Oh, Cookie Monster Werewolf, you're so You're frankly terrifying.
If you ask for
Well, it was great to see him come back as when he was holding Sue for ransom. He was a lot of people's highlight of the year.
That was very funny.
Like, he wasn't, I mean, Karen, you know, I'm just saying, I think you have an insight into Cookie Monster, you were a werewolf. I don't believe he was originally intended for the role.
No,
I think it just sort of came out like
that.
It was
just one of those happy accidents where basically if I try and put on a voice, I just sound like a Jim Henson creation. I tried to do The Voice recently and I'm sure lots of people realised it sounded like a knockoff Yoda. So I just, I can't do it.
You and Frank Oz, you're very good.
I just go immediately Sesame Street.
Oh, now, wouldn't we all like to see Muppet Christmas Carol style version of Sweet Valley? Now, who would be played by a human?
Oh.
That's because obviously Miss Piggy plays both twins.
Oh, I mean, of course. Yes.
Couldn't be anyone else.
100%.
Is that like which character, not even which actor, which character could be? Mr. Collins?
Oh.
Played by Robert Redford.
I mean, that's kind of perfect. Trying to keep all these mad kids under control.
Well, you know, if that Sweet Valley TV series ever gets made, and God help us, we've been waiting for it for some time.
Like, there was all that talk about a movie for years, and it was like, oh, and Diablo Cody's going to write it, and then that all fell apart, and then somebody else was attached to it.
Kristen Smith wrote 10 Things I Hate About You.
She was attached. There was somebody else who I think wrote on, like, Steven Universe or something that I'm not super familiar with, but it was like, okay, this could be cool. Yeah. That was the most recent thing. And then it all just kind of went away. And then it was like, oh, we're going to revive the TV show. And it was going to be like the guys who did Riverdale. Oh, and I was like, fucking nice one, let's do this thing. And then that all fucking fell apart.
I mean, as I think you said in our last PBA episode, like, Sweet Valley walked so Riverdale could run.
100%.
Like, unhinged. Yeah. Sweet Valley post 100 is essentially Riverdale.
Kind of is.
It's got serial killers. It's got like...
We're going supernatural with it.
Yeah, like, it's got it all.
All bets are off.
It's even had a cult already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe 2024 will be the year.
Who knows?
We finally get...
Like, we're so due news because, like, loads of things are getting revived. Like, the Babysitter's Club has had a whole revival as well.
Yeah, that did get cancelled. I think they made two series out of it. So, you know.
But still, I mean, if I had two series of a new Sweet Valley show and then got cancelled, I'd be like, you know what? Fine. I have two new series to talk about and look at and be delighted about.
Oh, well, you know, Hollywood, we are right here. Writers, consultants, like, we'll do whatever
you need. We're willing.
I mean, obviously, showrunners would be our ideal position.
Absolutely, yeah. Given the choice.
Yeah. Which doubtless we will have.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah. And if we had to do a TV movie, I know how we'd costume it, because we were introduced this year to the concept of Barbarcore.
Oh, my God. What a gal.
We did not see that coming.
No, but it's so funny. I feel like sometimes you kind of go in to, like, record something about a book, and, like, as you're recording it or, like, in the comments afterwards, something else just completely takes on a life of its own that we just didn't see coming.
And in this case, it was Barbarcore, because she does have a unique look.
She does.
Several people pointed out she looks like the cover of the Victoria Holt sort of melodramas.
I wasn't familiar with those books. And when, as soon as I saw the covers, it was just like, oh my God, it's her. She's standing on a cliff. It's perfect.
They were always standing on a cliff. I used to, like, my school library had some of them. And then I did find a few of them in secondhand bookshops, because they are always like a girl in peril.
Yeah.
Often an evil guardian.
Running away from a castle.
Yes, with flowing locks.
Amazing.
And of course, the thing with Barbara was that her clothes were meant to be from the 40s. She was basically wearing like silk tea dresses and lace blouses.
Yeah, so good. Bonnets as well. Remember, she had a straw bonnet?
Oh my God. She did have a bonnet. Like, who the fucking, like, 1946 was wearing a bonnet? Like, come on. Somebody did say that they're... I'm just going to try and find it now. Yes, it was Hillary said, honestly, nothing has made me laugh as hard as Nicholas Morrow moaning and groaning.
He moaned and groaned so much in that book. It was like worrying.
No, Barbara, I can't.
But he was constantly like exclaiming and crying things out when they're all supposed to be like sneaky and hiding in the woods and whatever. And he was constantly just like, Barbara.
Such a drama queen.
Oh my God.
Like the least chill. Like stealth girl rescuer. Remember there was one stage where she was talking to What was her name? Jocene? Mm. And
Jocene. History's greatest monster, Jocene. Oh. Yes. I'm familiar.
Possibly, if it wasn't for Jeremy, she would definitely be the worst villain of 2023. She's worse than the werewolf.
Just the worst.
But there was one stage where, like, Hera and Barbara are in, like, a woodland glade, and she literally just turns her back. She's still, like, 5 feet away, and Nicholas is leaping out of the bushes, like, Bob, I must have you.
Oh, my God.
And Josie's like, what's that?
What the fuck? I'm so confused, but also, what the fuck is that?
So the whole, I'm glad we got, even though it was a very stupid book, we got a taste of sort of Victorian melodrama.
100%.
Going on.
Yeah, like none of it should have been anyways Victorian. But it's so funny. If anything is like from the past, it's automatically weird Victoriana,
Yes, the way it's like wearing bonnets or like writing with a quill. It's never like, they had biros. And they're always sort of giving mysterious statements they could, you know, oh, that's all I shall say here with my mysterious little dog. It's like, oh, is she a ghost?
Am I a ghost? Who knows? Yeah. I did actually particularly love when, like, after they had met Barbara a few times and were then looking at the photo gallery or the art exhibition.
Yes.
And there was a picture of the grandmother and Jessica, like, fully serious, was like, oh my God, Barbara's a ghost. It's like, you were just talking to her. Come on. But it was great.
I mean, it just jumps straight through it.
Straight in.
And they already knew because of History's Greatest Monster Jocene had pointed out that, like, she looked really like her grandmother and she used to get confused with her. But yeah, brain of the century, Jessica, is on the case.
She's got this.
Though maybe Jessica's skills lie elsewhere, because she showed her skills as a childminder this year, and actually quite effectively.
That's true, actually. God, back in the days of the Club Paradise. Was that what it was? Paradise Club? Club Paradise? Everything is something Paradise.
It was all Club Paradise and it was like Kiddie Paradise.
Kiddie
Paradise.
It was
like the miniature.
And the kids' club and everything was with a K.
Version.
Yeah.
It was all with a K. And Jessica had her little monsters.
They were the HLKs, the happy little campers.
Yes! And Lila had hers marching behind her going, row, row, row your yacht.
That's right. She has like little ducklings.
It was amazing. But of course, one of the little monsters captured her heart.
Oh my God. As only a small child with that name could.
And we are, of course, talking of Jerry Pat.
Holy shit. What, like, just the big Irish head on Jerry Pat.
Oh my God.
Undeniable.
Like, just, we can see him now. Yep. Actually, Roisin Muldoon. Mm-hmm. Long time listener and friend of the show, did, I think, capture Jerry Pat's appeal. Can you share what she wrote 45 weeks ago, according to Instagram?
Wow. So perfectly encapsulating Jerry Pat. Yes, Roisin said, Jerry Pat, he's sitting there with baler twine as a belt, drinking red lemonade and loving life.
He sure is.
And that is so the essence of Jerry Pat.
It really is. Just so Jerry Pat.
Doesn't even matter what he did in the books, because that is Jerry Pat.
That is in our mind's eye.
Yes.
That is the once and future Jerry Pat.
Absolutely. Jerry, you need some green diesel, Jerry Pat. He's got this.
I'll get you a canister of gas.
He's just dropping a bag of spuds around just because. It's Jerry Pat. Classic.
I don't know if there is an international equivalence of, I'd actually be interested to know, of the both the Jerry Pat vibe and also like the big Irish head.
Big Irish head. Yeah, I wonder actually.
Kenmore Aronagh.
Oh, yeah, did like Canadians see each other on holidays and go, oh, that's definitely a Canadian couple? Because like when you're Irish, it is so obvious. Like we can spot each other miles away.
Embarrassingly obvious. Like you could just see them.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Like there's just a vibe and for white Irish people, a pallor.
Oh God. There's a certain translucence to the skin that's undeniable.
That even with sunscreen, it doesn't take to the sun.
No, we're not made for the sun.
We're not. We get very red, and even when we're sunscreened up, it's just like it's an internal redness because we can't deal with heat either. So yes, the big Irish head is very much a thing. It like Paul Mescal has a big Irish head.
Oh, he totally, like that lad is a hurler for Leitrim. Like, it's amazing that he's a Hollywood heartthrob. To be honest,
absolutely bizarre. Like when I was walking into Electric Picnic a few months ago, which is a big festival in Leitrim, where I was interviewing his sister at an event. So I did meet his parents.
Nice,
very nice. As was his sister. But there were so many lads going in like with their, you know, their GA jerseys,
the GA shorts
and their shorts.
And the chain.
And in some cases, the chain. And I was like, all the international people who find Paul Mescal kind of, you know, exotically bewitching. They'd have a field day.
Oh my God.
If they turned up there.
They would love Electric Picnic.
Yeah, big Irish heads as far as the eye could see.
We have a surplus of big Irish heads over here.
Well, speaking of Irish men, you know, we are members of the Headstuff Podcast Network, and we like to share with you a podcast from the network that you might like to check out. And this week we're telling you about Young Hot Guys.
Yes, that's right. They're young, they're hot, they're guys. It's a weekly comedy podcast, and it's hosted by Killian Sunderman, Shane Danburn and Tony Cantwell. And all three of those are extremely sound and extremely funny lads.
Very funny.
So they just started the podcast, I believe, in November, and it's been doing really well for them, which is no surprise because they are absolutely gas.
Yes.
So it's definitely worth tuning into that.
It's been topping the Irish podcast charts.
Well then, I mean, just what more proof would you need?
Indeed. And you could hear a little bit right now.
Hi, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your podcast.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm young.
Yes, I'm hot.
And I'm gay. And we're young hot guys.
Yes.
Really, I apologize for interrupting, but we have our own podcast.
Yes, it's also on the Headstuff Podcast Network. Yeah. Sorry for interrupting, but it's really good. And
I didn't want to say this, but it's actually really, really, really good.
Really funny.
Really funny. My mum says so.
We are three guys, but we're not real blokey. Do you know what I mean? We're soft and friendly and nice.
Yeah. Exactly. Like this timid request to ask you to listen to our podcast. Exactly. Yeah. We're not going to bash you over the head. No. We're approachable men.
Yeah. So listen, when you're finished this one, don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a good part coming up.
But if you don't, we will bash over the head. I know people. Anyway, enjoy the podcast.
No threat.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
And now, back to Sweet Valley, where we're going to take a little detour from Sweet Valley, because one of our favorite moments was when a certain douchebag prince made his way to our shores.
Oh. Oh my God. Again, I had totally forgotten about this. I feel like some of the books that we did like earlier this year just got kind of disappeared because of all the werewolf madness and the Jeremy madness, and like the really big moments just kind of took over in my head. But like, I'm so glad someone reminded us of this.
They did.
Because the image of the Patman family decked out in their fancy Burberry gear. I mean, hoofing their way up Parnell Square to get to Dublin's acclaimed and iconic wax museum is truly an image for the ages.
Wow. To go and look at wax figures of like RTE presenters.
A melted Gayburn, like they'd have any interest.
40 goats. Well, actually, I found the exact reference. We're told that Bruce remembered his parents posing next to the statue of Rodin's The Kiss at the Wax Museum in Dublin.
Oh, my God. That is so funny. But I feel like the ghostwriter must have just had an image in their heads of like the Wax Museum in Dublin is clearly like, you know, a Madame Tussauds type of situation. It is emphatically not that.
Oh, my God. Even when you were a kid. Like, it was, what the fuck is this meant to be?
Oh my God.
Because you'd have heard about Madame Tussauds. And,
that's the thing. Like, that was like the gold standard. The Dublin Wax Museum. To be fair, it's kind of its selling point now is kind of like how hilariously shit it is.
And it's moved locations.
It has.
I have not been to that institution since it was in Parnell Square and also in about 1985.
But it also had a very like iconic look on the outside. It didn't have a huge figure of like
Jack of the Beanstalk.
No. It was something, some big
giant thing.
A big dude was like climbing the outside of it or something, wasn't he? So it did look very cool, especially when you were a kid in the 90s. It was like...
This is true. Cool. When I was in college, my bus used to go very close to it on the way home. So I did see it in all its glory. would the Patmans have been impressed by it? Could you see Marie Patman grooving up to the Wax Museum and being like,
no,
this is better than the Book of Kells?
No, it seems very unlikely.
But, I mean, who knows what impresses the denizens of Sweet Valley? Because we learned they were quite gullible when we found out that... They believed that Todd and Lila were young executives. They were the young executives. Every time I see those words, I can't not sing it to young Americans.
It scans too well not to.
It really does. The most insane plan.
What the fuck was that? It was so convoluted. Like, so ridiculous. But, like, wasn't Lila's young executive outfit, like, head to toe scarlet? Like,
it was.
What a look. Fucking Carmen Sandiego is here, and she is not going to steal a truck. Don't worry about it.
Not only. Yeah. Well, actually, very Carmen Sandiego. She had a matching hat.
That's right.
Her scarlet, her elegant scarlet suit.
Oh.
With matching hat.
Beautiful.
Like,
just an icon.
What
a gal.
And then, of course, there's Robbie November's cousin, who's like, who's somehow like the vice president, even though he's about 20.
God. He was a child in charge of a department who still, for some reason, had to like sneak around and steal keys and do all that bullshit.
Steal power trucks.
Oh my God.
But lest we forget that the young executives weren't their only disguises on that mission.
Oh my God. Yes. Was it like a boiler suit?
Yes.
That they had? And Lila, of course, had the most amazing accessory of all.
She had the fake mustache. We are told, here it is, she had fastened a fake moustache to her upper lip and had pulled her hair back in a white painter's cap. They were all wearing SVP, that's Sweet Valley Power. Uniforms, and had smudged their faces with dirt to conceal their identities. Like, I think if you answered the door to somebody who was like, I'm Sweet Valley Power, and they were like covered in like
soot
and like a chimney sweep.
Fucking Mario moustache on, you'd be like, Lila, what are you doing? What is going on with you?
Well, that's young executives for you. You never know what they're going to do. Just they're high powered and out of control.
And very inventive.
Very inventive. And then, of course, their plan fell apart in like 2 seconds.
Oh my God.
When they got there.
And there was also that like reworked Wakefield House floor plan that made no sense.
Oh, there were sort
of
being boosted up
to see.
There
were windows up
high.
I didn't know what the fuck was happening. But yeah, it was like...
It was very confusing.
Very. And like, was it like Jeremy like ran out of the house wearing a balaclava or something, and one of them tackled him and they were like, oh no, it's just Jeremy, off you go. There's nothing untoward going on.
He's just running around with a balaclava on.
It's totally normal behaviour.
What about it?
Yeah.
Wasn't the only time those moustaches got used though, because I remember the stupidest, patheticest stag party of all time.
Oh my God.
The gatecrashers not have moustaches as part of their ensembles?
Did they have moustaches?
Maybe they didn't. Maybe it's all blending into
one. We possibly have just decided they had moustaches because that's too funny.
What they did have, you might recall, the girls decided to gatecrash Jeremy's frankly tragic...
It was so sad.
...stag party.
It was the saddest stag party.
His only guests were like some teenagers he'd met a few weeks ago.
Like literally days before.
Including Robbie November, who I think we soon found out had only been his friend for like a fortnight.
His best man, Robbie November. Yeah, like... And yeah, it was literally like Todd and Winston and Bruce, and they were already disappointed there was no girl jumping out of a cake. They were obsessed with the girl jumping out of the cake.
So obsessed.
So funny. And I love that way. Was it Jessica kept saying how like, oh, there'll be girls running around in bikinis because they couldn't possibly say strippers. It was like, no, girls in bikinis. Like, it's not Benny Hill. What do you think happens at stag parties?
Well, not much in that one. I seem to recall Bobby November made salmon mousse.
He made a very nice dinner that no one appreciated.
Well, I hope he's making nice dinners wherever he is now, because he just disappeared.
Just another one. Him and who else has disappeared? Like, loads of people just fucking disappear in these miniseries. It's so funny. Like, they're such a big integral part, and then it's like, never heard from again. But actually never heard from again.
Well, I mean, I've got to say that in the case of Army November, it is really weird that in the next, because usually there's like a perfunctory reference to the last miniseries.
And he moved home or whatever.
Yeah, because like they did mention the whole Jeremy stuff, but like the fact that Lila had found her true love, just forgotten.
Matter. Yeah, not important enough.
Though, you never know. He might make a grand return, like certain other parties.
Oh my God. Oh God. Well, this was the thing, because like this was in the Pom-Pom Wars, or was it the next one? Was it the next
it
one?
It was the oh, no, next sorry. One, because it wasn't Jessica Quiz the Squad.
This was the Pom-Pom Wars. Yeah, because you had texted me saying a familiar face returns.
Yes.
And I was kind of, and you hadn't told me who it was.
No, so I couldn't spoil it.
I was reading it and I was like, oh, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? And then like Mr. Krasinski, the dance teacher, turned up and I was like, oh, it must be him, because he was gassed because he had like fled the Iron Curtain to teach bitchy teenagers.
And he was just mean to Jessica because she was so talented.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Of course, because Wakefields are amazing at everything.
Of course.
So I was like, okay, it's clearly him. And then Mandy fucking Farmer strides in and it was like, holy shit.
Blast from the past.
She's back. And as a few people have pointed out, they had actually said, I think, in the few books after, that she had like moved away. So it was really one of those wild inconsistencies. But I was just so glad to see her again, because it was so fucking funny.
Because she did become the poster girl for like, I think we thought we'd never hear from her again or see her again. And then she did pop up a book later.
She keeps you on your toes, does Mandy Farmer.
She does. Like sometimes, you know, she may just wait a few books at the beginning and then she may just wait for like
100 books
or something. But she bided her time.
Oh my God. That's it. You just never know when Mandy Farmer will turn up. I just remember writing in my notes literally Mandy fucking Farmer. I cannot believe this.
Seriously.
It was like one of those like all caps texts to you, because I was just like, holy shit.
Of course.
Did not see that coming.
I hope you appreciate the restraint I showed.
I really do. Well done.
No, thank you.
You did a great job.
I'm very welcome. And we didn't spoil it for listeners either.
That's true.
We let it just surprise them as it surprised
us. As it turned up. Yeah.
Now, speaking of the cheerleaders, there was some love in the comments for cheerleader.
Cheerleader! Oh my God. Well, that was so funny, because we did speculate as to how cheerleader license plates could possibly work, and it was just as stupid as we thought.
It was! I hope wherever Mandy's gone, like, she'll get a chance to have cheerleader plates at some
stage. Yeah, maybe hers will just say cheer, you know, which would actually make sense.
And fit the same amount of letters.
Well, there you go.
Maybe there's some reason you're not allowed to have vowels or something like that. But
yeah, I wonder. Although One Bruce One would beg to differ.
Oh, there you go. Two vowels in that one. Well, a lot of you shared our horror at Jeremy and having to spend so much time with him this year.
Yeah.
But there was one element of his storyline that I think had us all captivated. And that was the highly unusual choice of gifts that his parents, who the fuck knows, decided to send for the wedding that never was. Oh, can you remind everybody who has somehow forgotten about it?
Oh my God, the iconic gift all the way from Australia, apparently, that was the matching koala jumpers.
Matching koala jumpers.
Like, who sent them? Now that we know he was a big fake.
Like,
what?
Because presumably they had like Australian stamps on them.
I guess.
Like, does he have an accomplice in Australia?
He's got a world wide web of henchmen. Yeah. Just like.
Or are his parents in it?
Maybe they are.
But it was like, I'm just thinking, if I got matching koala jumpers as a wedding present, like, I guess I'd be. Thank you.
Oh my God.
I guess I rock the, I don't know, I try and rock the koala jumpers.
Oh, but I would wear a koala jumper.
But I don't know if I would think it was appropriate but wedding present for my parents.
But like so much about that whole storyline made absolutely no sense. Like even as we were going through it, it'd be like, oh, okay, and maybe this will be explained. And then it wasn't.
No, never.
And I feel like someone did point out that like the way it ended, I think we were all just so relieved when it ended that we possibly missed the opportunity to go back and be like,
what the fuck was
what
all
the
of this?
Fuck was all of that? Seriously, like.
Well, here's Miranda Gian commented in on Instagram saying, "I have spent so much of this year thinking about Jeremy and Sue's insane plan to get your inheritance. It was so convoluted. Like, people from New York flew out to California for this. Robbie, who didn't know Jeremy was his best man, all this for a tiny inheritance."
Oh my god, the fact that the Mealquick inheritance was so small—a
quarter of a million—that
was so. Funny, like you just, I was reading that whole series assuming there was millions on the line here, like for this amount of effort and stupidity, surely there's a big payday coming here. And it was like, oh, so you can barely buy a house with this again?
Even then?
Like, you're just going to be working for the rest of your life. This isn't like I'm retiring to fucking Puerto Rico money. This
Oh no, this is like you're going to have to get a job and a work visa. Like, enjoy your... In life as international fugitives.
I guess. Like, it was just so little money to go to so much effort.
And as loads of people did point out, and I think we did notice this ourselves at the time, the fact that, like, they just had to stay apart for a month.
No, my God.
And they could have just done that. Like, he didn't have to have the whole Jessica thing. Or then the kidnapping. Well, the kidnapping thing, someone did point out, he really thought on his feet.
I guess,
because he managed to go from Jessica seeing them, like, in the woods to having this whole kidnap plot and the recordings and the Cookie Monster werewolf messages. Like,
he was back.
And the weird attic kidnap den. Like, I mean, say what you want about him. But he's he can go with the flow.
You know, that pervert can think on his feet. I did like Pippi and Shirley pointing out, or giving a shout out at least to Sue and her intestinal / urinary system of steel while kidnapped with bats. Yeah.
Never forget the bats.
We also got a great message from Shaylee Rogers, who was obsessed with the Deception series as an impressionable teen, apparently. But she was giggling like mad as we were theorising, because of course we didn't know what was coming. But kind of wanted to know when it kind of clicked for us that Sue was actually in on the whole thing.
Yes, and I think the moment we suspected was when he did have his two framed photos, again with the framed photos, by his bedside in Costa Rica. And he was like, "I'll see you soon, baby," but you didn't know which one he was talking to. And then, of course, the it wasn't the deeply inappropriate video by Winston of all the hot makeout places.
Oh, it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
The
beach
was
one of the makeout places. Yeah. It was Amy's, like, Amy had invited Jessica to, like, video club or whatever it was.
Yes.
Like a new club they'd started.
And she had made her moody mood piece where
with Jessica
was sort of gazing out to sea.
Looking all dramatic in a headscarf or whatever.
Of course.
Yeah.
And then, Jess Winston was like the very odd choice for a school project of all the places.
To
get the shift.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it was like, it was like someone who looked like Jeremy and a girl in a knit sweater ran up to him. And it was like, oh my God, she is in on it. Because I think up to that point, I'd been hoping she was because she was just too pathetic otherwise.
Really was. I think we did say that would be an amazing twist. But it was actually briefly satisfying that it was revealed. But then it just got into the whole kidnapping mess.
I wanted her to be a proper schemer, like for Sue to be kind of like
a villain.
As much a villain.
Yes.
As Jeremy was. Because there was a great bit, like really early on, when she was getting her nails done and she like snapped at like the nail technician. And it was like, oh, is she actually a huge bitch? And this is all like a nice girl act that she's doing. But that kind of never really went anywhere.
No.
Because even with the reveal that she was in on it, it was still, oh, but I'm a nice girl and I don't really want to trick anybody. And it was like, no, be a bitch about it.
That would be much more entertaining.
Yeah.
Like, go full villain. That would have been, you know, a sort of soapy treat.
It would have been.
But instead, we just had her sort of moaning about, like, oh no, I can't. Now I have to go off to Costa Rica with
God.
Like, no, you don't.
You really don't.
For sake. Yeah, Sue was not one of the highlights.
No, not so much. But there was a lot of mad shit, I guess, in that. Even though, as someone pointed out, we spent almost half a year talking about Jeremy.
Horrific. Like, I can't believe that we spent so long.
So bad.
And like, we did get some great gems from it.
I believe
that the costume party with Winston and Maria in a certain pair of outfits happened.
Oh my God, that's so true. It did bring us the amazing moment that was Winston Egbert dressed as Captain Picard. Which, it was so funny because it was like the one time a fancy dress party in Sweet Valley had like current references for the mid-90s. Because they're always like, referencing movies from like the 50s or the fucking Rolling Stones or whatever, like Mick Jagger is someone Jessica
on the
fancies,
dance floor,
which is insane. There's absolutely no way that's true, but like just the fact that it was a current pop culture reference was just, it just felt so weird but brilliant to see it.
Oh, it was a genuine laugh out loud moment. It wasn't Maria like dressed as a Vulcan.
She was, you're right. Like, of course, this was all the time that this was like Winston's subplot where he kept getting terrible haircuts because he kept going to the same guy.
That's true.
So he basically had like a shaved head. So he made it work and went to Picard. And good for him.
Good for you, Winston. But I think there can, I think that we have reached the point where we are going to mention our favourite. We haven't been revealing these in any particular order.
That's the thing. They were too hard to rank because, like, they've all been so mad in their own ways that, to be honest, it would have been a lot of work to rank them. And who wants to be doing work at this time of year? Come on. We're all checked out at this week already.
We really are. We just want to go home and make a Chattanooga turnip salad.
The dream.
Few people did vote for that.
Oh my God, that is so funny.
It was so confusing. And this is why we're so grateful to our listeners, because they did give us turnip chat.
I learned about American turnips, you know.
Didn't even know they existed.
Did not know that was a thing. True, the cultural exchange that is double love continues to work. I love it.
I still had to, you know, I was sad to say goodbye to the mental image of Alice just like dumping a giant sack of turnips and like make yourself dinner.
Make a salad with that. Just break your teeth off this huge turnip.
This giant pile of root vegetables. I mean, who knows? Like, it could have been...
Maybe she was onto something, you know?
I mean, we still haven't tried it. Maybe that's what we should have done instead of taking in our tiny cans. We should have made a Chattanooga turnip salad.
Oh, God.
But the Chattanooga turnip salad is not the highlight of 2023. Now, Jessica did a lot of unhinged things in her pursuit of Jeremy. Mm-hmm. You might remember inviting herself along on two of Jeremy's dates.
And that actually was somebody else's highlight, I think. Just her like clambering around the cinema seats and knocking popcorn over everybody.
It was. Where was it? Yeah, it was the whole list of terrible things that she did. It was Casey and Sydney. Best moments for me. All of Jessica's insane acts to break up Sue and Jeremy. Mm-hmm. Stalking them at the movies.
Oh, yeah.
That was climbing over cinema seats. Fake twisted ankle while picking up trash. Pretending she is dating Bruce. Now that was
that
good.
That was so good. Because they have such a funny like love-hate relationship where like they're still sparking off chemistry, but they're just like smiling sweetly and saying horrible things to each other, which is always really funny.
It is. And she kept accusing him of just going out with the, you know, going along with it for like the free fancy dinners. I was like, you pig.
That was so good. But again, it's just that thing of Bruce having chemistry with everybody, basically.
He really does. Like, lest we forget the moment he and Lila kissed.
Oh my God. And then just nothing ever came of that. But it was such a brilliant little moment.
So good. The chemistry was there. Like, we hate to say it, but he does have chemistry with everyone.
He does. Like, much like Winston in the TV show.
Yes.
Got chemistry with everyone. Like, we're shipping it. We don't care.
You know, we're aware of how terrible Bruce is in real life. Ugh. Would we think this was a good idea for him to get?
No. Absolutely not. But to be fair, they retcon characters so often, it's kind of like they've just decided none of that really iffy early stuff happened with him.
They kind of have, because I don't think they could make him redeemable. Although, hang on, didn't they mention it when he was having his, like, crisis with Pamela? Oh. I think they did mention, or one of those early books this year, when he was talking about being with Liz, there was like some reference to the fact he tried to take advantage of her, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I feel about that, but
yeah.
You know what? He's a problematic fave.
And you know, all your faves are problematic. Yeah. And Sweet Valley is the Olympics of problematic faves. Let's not kid ourselves.
Very, very
If we're going to start splitting hairs about problematic characters, we're already in way too deep
here. Oh God, this is the wrong show. But Bruce and his antics was not our favourite moment of the year. Because there could be only one. Oh. And I think that the people agreed with us.
I think so too.
Can you share the greatest moment in on Double Love, possibly in the world, in 2023?
Well, look, it was the first thing that came to mind for me straight away when it was like top moments.
Same.
And it just had to be Jessica lashing that wedding dress under the muddy wheels of a passing truck in a car park because she was so enraged at the thought of... Jeremy seeing Sue's underpants that she simply could not cope with the thought and just was like, no, I'm yeeting this fucking dress underneath this truck.
And she yeeted it.
She yeeted good. I mean, I think why I love it so much is that I didn't expect it.
No.
And like, we're coming off the back of like Margot and all that insanity. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, that was bananas. We had our little like three-parter of like a little more normal kind of parents, whatever, Bruce and Liz, yeah. And that was fun. Then we had werewolves and it was like, well, where the fuck do we go from here? There's simply no way to match this kind of drama. And then that happened and it was just the campest.
Oh my God.
Most over the top thing. It was pure soap opera and I just howled. Like
camp magnificence.
Honestly.
Like, it was the fact that as well, it wasn't thought out.
No.
Like that she's just like,
no thinking ahead, no consequences, just like it's pure age life.
I mean, that is Jessica, yeah, I guess, all the time. She doesn't really, you know, consider things much. No. And I seem to remember that to add to the drama, like Sue was just going, my dress! Yes! What have you done to my dress?
Oh my God. It was just so fucking funny. And I think it is the fact that like, I just really didn't know how they were going to top werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, well, fuck me, they did it.
They did. Turns out what it takes to top werewolves is Jessica chucking somebody's brand new wedding dress underneath the giant, like, massive truck.
It was just so silly and so mad, like such a mad thing for her to do when she's trying to keep it cool and not let on how she's feeling and that she's actually mad after Jeremy and to just fling that dress across the car park.
I love it so much. I love it. Oh, no wonder Alice was, I think that was the moment where Alice was like, what have I raised?
What have I done? Oh my God, I've made a huge mistake.
Something she should be asking herself on a pretty much daily basis.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, is it the worst thing Jessica has ever done? Lest we forget the whole drink spiking.
Oh, I mean,
you know, letting Liz almost go to prison for years for manslaughter.
Yeah.
However, is it the most entertaining bad thing she's ever done?
Oh my God. Yes, 100%. Like, there is quite the league table of the worst things Jessica has ever done. But at least this one was just so fucking funny. I can't fault her for it. Like,
and the fact it came out of nowhere. Like, it just didn't. A beautiful surprise.
Unbelievable.
I think a lot of our favourite moments this year have been the ones that took us by surprise.
It's the stuff that catches you off guard. Because I knew werewolves were coming. And like, don't get me wrong, that series was so fucking fun and so silly.
So good.
And absolutely mad and so dramatic. And like, the werewolf poetry truly belongs in its own category for what the fuck was going on there.
Even the fact, I think somebody did ask, like, they had so many, you know, when mentioning their highlights, the fact that he was like mauling people in his like,
in a rubber mask.
Werewolf teeth.
How does that work?
Like, how is that? It's
that was Magpie's Nest Ceremonies said, how do you savage someone with a rubber mask? How did Bumpo's forensics find wolf DNA? Like, truly so many unanswered questions from that series.
I mean, well, Jen Teresta did say, if Cookie Monster Werewolf isn't the highlight of 2023, I will write some bad dramatic poetry about it.
I love it.
Sister Betty Confetti said, Cookie Monster Werewolf is an icon.
Oh, wow.
Sure is.
I'll let him know. He'll be delighted.
I like this from Halloween. He said, I know it's been a tough year for a lot of us, but it's been reliably excellent to come here and talk nonsense with you all. Likewise. So highlights include Marjo Theory.
Oh, that was fun.
I mean, if there's anyone who's not on Instagram, can you explain the Marjo Theory?
Okay, I can't remember who actually came up with this, so apologies. But it was basically, the theory that, I guess in those first kind of three books post-Margot, there was a lot of references to like, Jessica's the evil twin, and these little throwaway like evil twin references.
Yes.
So the theory did surface that Margot was successful in her mission and took Jessica's place and had been masquerading as Jessica from book 100 onwards.
There's a lot of stuff
You know what? There's a lot to back that up.
A lot. A worrying lot, some would say. So yes, that was sort of a low alley theory. Then Cookie Monster Werewolf, the endless tag yourself threads that routinely leave me in tears from laughing.
I swear, that has actually been a highlight of mine just this year, because those are reliably hilarious.
I have cried laughing at those threads. I mean, if any of you are not on Instagram, I don't think you don't have to have an account to
I don't
see.
I think so, yeah.
It's, to be honest, I'd say it's worth signing up.
You know what? Sign up and lurk.
Don't give Mark Zuckerberg any of your, you know, or the or Facebook's, you know, data mining thing.
Make up a fake profile. It'll be fine. Just have a look at the comments, because honestly, it is always such good crack in the comments, and the tag yourself threads have been stellar.
All year long.
Yeah.
Her other highlights were young executives, Victorian ghosts, and little lords.
Oh my God.
Life can be shit, but we'll always have Robbie November.
Oh, will we? Where do you go?
Lila doesn't. But oh my God. I guess we will.
There you go. Actually, Marriage Not Butter had a great point that the fact that a werewolf wasn't enough, they had to add a secret princess to the London trilogy.
So true.
Princess Eliana, the runaway princess. And as somebody else pointed out, like, that whole royal family bit was so weird because the royal family seemed to exist in the Sweet Valley universe. Lila has dressed up as Princess Diana on more than one occasion.
We know she's got a wig.
She's got that outfit locked and loaded and ready to go at a moment's notice. So, like, if Diana exists, then what's the deal with the royal family?
Also, remember when Rose's lie?
Yes.
She claimed that she'd been hanging out with Diana and Fergie.
Oh, my God. Yes.
So they are canon hilarious. In the world. And yet, there's, what was the other one? Princess Gloria. Was that the big sister? Like, they all sounded like Coronation Street barmaids.
Yes.
Like, they did not
none of these are royal family royals. Names at all. It was like Princess Tiffany. Like, no, get out of here.
It's like when there were some recent sort of soapy programs where they've got like Prince Simon and Prince, like, Ian, and all these very sort of, or Nigel, these very sort of middle class names, but they just aren't quite right for royals. the royal family in the books was insane because the Queen existed, even though at the time she was like in her 60s.
The Queen had a teenage daughter.
Yeah, it was a medical miracle. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But yes, there were so many things about the London months.
It fucking felt like years though, let's face it.
It did.
Oh my God. But yeah, there was loads of great comments from you guys as well. Actually, I did like Ernest and Shallow wanted to shout out everything about Project Nature, the world's most ineffective international organization. Like, surely that place has just been blacklisted from NGOs everywhere
because what the fuck
are they doing? They've got that cabin in the woods where teens are having parties. What are they up to?
Constant seasonal decorations.
Yeah, it's definitely a cult.
And then there was, I mean, other people did point out earlier that the nature organization that sponsored Jessica sponsored the
Brazil trip and all that for the jungle prom. Yeah.
What do they think was going on? Like, did they ever follow that one up?
So were you going to Brazil or what?
Like, should we just give this to somebody else? I mean, we are clearly a very shoddy organization because we choose who gets our like residency on the basis of who's elected prom queen, but like knock yourselves out. And a few people did say the hair flips.
Oh, the hair flips have been such a big thing. And I think it's because people did that.
Yes.
Either because of these books or someone has sent us like, oh God, we got a great email where somebody had like a different book altogether, but somebody was doing a hair flip because that was how you fix your hair at a moment's notice. And
apparently,
it just would not be a runner for me.
So yeah, a lot of love for the hair flips. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, some people wanted to shout out some more minor characters. Mm-hmm. So now, I do not know if I'm pronouncing this right. So Ichbuz Hidau, or Ichbuz Hidau, if we're going Germanic. Sorry for probably butchering your name. But you did say the emergence of the bush in its iconic role.
Oh my God. Like, those kids love nothing better than hiding in a bush.
Nothing better. And the things those bushes have seen.
Oh my God. Actually, shout out to Joanna who came to our live show dressed as the bush. Because
oh my God.
She did such a good job.
Green leafy
beautiful
dress.
Beautiful leafy dress. Like, it was fantastic.
And seriously, like, that's why we it was very hard to choose winners for those costumes because they were all spectacular.
Everybody did such a good job. And again, there was a Cookie Monster werewolf there too. So plucky incidents knocked it out of the park with that one.
Completely. Now, some locations got their shout out.
Ooh.
Steffi Barra said, Jeremy's gross sex condo.
Oh my God, the sex condo.
And actually, a few people said that the fact that Jessica actually mentioned condoms.
Yes.
Was, and that, like, was going to have.
That was shocking.
Actual sexual activity.
She was thinking something through for once in her life.
That's true. She actually
which
was. Fair
was
play.
Very unusual, but it was very responsible of her, which
it
again,
was.
Unlike her. But again, I was making a list earlier and literally I just said, condoms! Exclamation mark. Because I'm like, whoa, things I did not expect to see mentioned in Sweet Valley High.
I think that was the most stunning part of it, was that it actually happened at all.
Yeah.
Like, it was getting quite racy.
That's the thing, yeah.
It's like they were literally talking about,
Well, that's it. Instead of just kind of dancing around it and being like, oh, you will be careful, won't you? But they literally said condoms, and it was just like, well, good.
I mean, considering that, you know, impressionable teens were reading it, at least they didn't think that Jessica was going to have unprotected sex.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So, you know, there are some good things. that we did hear from Bobbins and Buttons, said the her favourite moment was when we finally got rid of Nancy Jeremy was her top moment, and so say we all.
Oh, 100%. But again, even getting rid of him was a weird anticlimax, because it was like it all just happened off screen. It was
That's true.
And then we ran him off the road and now he's in jail.
And
what?
You never see him again.
Like, what?
They know. There's not even a confrontation.
It was such a load of nothing.
Like, Ned and Alice don't get to confront this person who's been like a regular guest in their home while attempting to bang their
perving on their 16-year-old
daughter.
So grim. But it was such a weird, like, nothing of an ending, wasn't it? But again,
really,
I think at the time we were just so glad it was over. we were like, that's fine, next.
Good riddance. Out of sight, out of mind, hopefully.
God, fully.
So I think Bobbins and Buttons really summed it all up. It's been a year of intense derangement, and I'm here for it.
That's the sentiment to carry through, I think, into next year.
It really is. Well, I think we might have covered all our fave moments of 2023.
I think potentially, yes. Although, one last thing, because High Fiver made a great point about the jazzy national anthem.
We can only imagine.
I mean, we've had a few suggestions that it could be like Whitney's iconic rendition of the Star Spangled Banner before, I think it was a Super Bowl in the 90s when she wore the gorgeous tracksuit, and it was Whitney. So, of course, it was amazing. There's also like Fergie's version of it from something else that was not maybe iconic in a different way.
In a very different way.
Very different reasons.
Interesting pronunciation of many of the words in that anthem.
So I do like that this is the mood board we've got going at the moment for Heather's jazzy version of the national anthem. So somewhere between all of that and Jimi Hendrix, who even knows?
Well, I mean, we haven't seen the last of Heather.
That's
so
true.
Maybe she'll do it again.
We're not done with her yet, her and her Mazda Miata.
Oh, and her amazing skills where she was called, like, she whipped. Actually, I should have put that in. Remember the moment where Jessica made her sing in front of the class thinking it was going to be terrible. And then she does her jazzy national anthem somehow. Yeah. And then she just whips a guitar out of nowhere and starts like grooving and some sort of bluesy number.
Like, yeah, Olivia Davidson better watch her back.
Well, I do think one of the worst plot lines of the year was Olivia and that creepy stalker.
Oh, that horrible pervert at the art gallery.
Yes. Bleh, he pretended he'd like bought her, that she her painting had been bought, and then she turned up and it was just like, it is I have bought it.
Run away, Olivia.
And then she went out with him, but then luckily, I think after the fancy dress party, he was never seen again.
He was just like disappeared off the face of the earth, and rightly so.
Well, hopefully we won't see him again, but again.
Look, who knows?
Really, who knows?
No, I don't know. Mandy Farmer will turn up on a Vespa and he'll be on the back of it.
Things we don't want to happen in 2024.
Yeah, do we have a worst of 23 list?
So, I put together a few things. Yeah. That was one of them.
Okay.
The weird...
That horrible dude.
Creep. Who Olivia inexplicably was charmed by.
She was so charmed and smitten. And it was just like, why, Olivia? He is a charm vacuum. Like, there was nothing going for that guy.
You could do better. Mm. One of the other things, now we didn't mention her briefly earlier, was the whole Pamela saga.
Oh, God.
Where it just felt like it was so boring.
Yeah.
She was just kind of a bit like... of a nothing burger sort of
character. She's a bit of a drip, isn't she, Pamela? Like, for all her beauty, she's just kind of a blank page of a character, really. Like, and this is the thing, because like, as we were saying, Bruce has chemistry with everyone except his girlfriend.
True. Oh, come on. Like, she needs to, like, let Pamela go back to, well, actually, she was in that other school that she transferred to, but could she just find love with somebody else? I don't wish her any ill, because it could have been an interesting plot.
It feels like she's just been kind of miserable and crying a lot this year, and it's like, let Pamela have some fun, for God's sake.
The whole thing was just her being slut-shamed, and Bruce being kind of a freak about it, and then realizing the error of his ways, and then that's it. Like, she never got to do anything else. I think she was somehow sometimes mentioned in the background.
Yeah,
like,
she's just kind of there. Yeah.
Yes,
I was like, oh, Pamela knows about this weird date I'm having with Jessica, so it's fine, type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, and this is way more fun to read about than anything you and Pamela do together.
But of course, the worst thing element of the whole year was Jessica's secret sex offender.
Oh, Jesus,
Jeremy himself. I mean, his koala jumpers may have given us a laugh.
That's true. Yeah.
his employment of Cookie Monster werewolves to meet his ransom demands. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also amusing.
Yes.
But he himself.
Oh. Grim.
Good riddance.
Good God. So glad that's over with.
Well, you know, we've got some treats in store for 2024. Mm-hmm. We've got the second half of the Cheerleaders.
Oh, yes. So the pom-pom wars will have a conclusion.
Eventually. Yeah. We will have the Death Valley saga.
Oh, yes. Bruce punches a snake. Did I?
He kills a snake with his bare hands.
I just decided he punches
correctly.
A snake.
Maybe he punches him. I can't remember. I just remember being like, fucking hell, this is escalation.
Oh,
quickly.
My God. I feel like anytime you've said that, I just picture it. There's a Jean-Claude Van Damme film where he literally punches a snake. So that's just what I picture every time I imagine Bruce and a snake together.
I mean, I'm hoping. Yeah. I remembered the snake killing element, and it was so, because it was so dramatic. Right. But I can't remember the methods.
Okay.
So,
no
fingers
match.
Crossed.
No match for Bruce.
I think they were being chased by like escaped convicts or something. There was a lot of drama in those books.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't wait till then, or even to the new year, when we'll be back with Return of the Evil Twin, you could, of course, listen to several years worth.
Honestly.
I mean, we're as surprised as you are. Of our bonus series, Pi Beta Alpha, by signing up to Headstuff Plus.
Yes, if you head on over to headstuffpodcast.com, you can sign up for as little as €5 a month. Like, we keep saying this, but genuinely now is a great time to sign up because we will be taking a break. Possibly back, usually we take January off.
Yeah.
So, like, there's like pretty much three entire series of Pi Beta Alpha to catch
like
up on.
Like 60 episodes.
That's so many.
Over 60 episodes, because I think each series has like 21
there's
or
like
22.
21 or 22, yeah. So we've been chatting about the Sweet Valley High TV series, which has proved to be way more fun than we ever thought.
Oh my God.
We are so attached to everybody on that show.
Even if you don't think you have any interest in the TV series.
I didn't think I had any interest in
it. Same.
And now I'm obsessed.
Yeah. You don't even have to watch it. Like, we know you're not reading all these books.
True. Yeah.
So you can still enjoy the Sweet Valley, our descriptions of the Sweet Valley Madness. Yeah. And that's what floats your boat.
Yeah. And look, it is on Amazon Prime in the States.
It is.
And most of them are on YouTube as
well.
They
are on YouTube.
The quality can decline slightly, but there's a few episodes where it is genuinely worth finding them on YouTube and watching them, because sometimes we can't quite do the madness justice, but we try every time.
We do our best.
And it's so much fun. We're having great crack over in the PBA Clubhouse. So do join us if you can. And look, if you can't, because fucking everyone's broke, lads, we get it. If you can leave us a rating or a review, that also really helps us out.
Yes. And I would like to thank a lot of the listeners who reached out to me recently, because some of you may know, if you saw social media or you're obviously in the Pi Beta Alpha Clubhouse, that my dad died very suddenly just 4 weeks ago, which is one of the reasons why we have been, our schedule has been a bit banjaxed. And as I did say in the Clubhouse last week, the reason that we're postponing the Return of the Evil Twin is partly because it's a lot of work preparing episodes, which I don't really have the headspace for, but also it does start out, this is so terrible, it's kind of funny. It starts out with like Nora, the hitherto unknown evil twin, standing next to her dad's coffin at his very dramatic funeral. So I was like,
not dealing with that this year.
Not right now. As I did say, like, I probably could be funny about it, but very much not funny about it a few minutes later. We will get to Nora.
We will.
Don't worry. But I heard from a lot of you, and I really, really appreciate it. One listener, I don't know if you want your name mentioned, so I'll there on the side of caution and say not mention it, but just told me that the podcast had cheered her up when she lost her own dad, and she was, you know, sending support to me after I lost mine, and that made me cry, but in a good way.
Oh.
So all the kind messages were very much appreciated, and we also thank you for your patience, because we know a lot of people were looking forward to the evil twin, Nora and Margot together at last, but we hope you will understand.
Yes.
Kind of worried about you if you didn't understand. I mean, Margot, like,
are you Margot if you're upset by this?
Exactly.
Have you been hearing voices?
Uh-oh. All we could say is, patience.
Oh, and see, that's the voice. Not my banjax attempt at it.
Hard on yourself, you are. So, we will actually have a an episode from the bonus series for everybody, a Christmas episode. We're going to give that to you.
Yeah, I feel like usually we end up talking about a Christmas episode in the bonus series in like July or something. Yes. So we're going to release that onto the main feed so everybody can have a little Christmas treat.
I believe it's the one where they did their version of A Christmas Carol.
That's right, yes. Ready, Set, Snow. Yeah, so we've got Ghosts of Christmas Past, Present, Future. They all look amazing.
They really do. And of course, you can guess which spoiled divas get visited by these ghosts. It is Lila and Jessica, who are on top form. So, I guess we'll see you all in the clubhouse.
There you go, yeah. Christmas clubhouse is open to all.
Hooray! And we will see you back here very soon in 2024 when we find out what happens when Jessica and Elizabeth are confronted with the return of the evil twin. It is actually focused. It builds up to a new year. Mm.
It is more of a new year book than it is a Christmas book.
Yeah,
fairness,
so it actually is quite appropriate.
Yeah, so actually, this was a great idea.
There you go. We will see you in the clubhouse and then back in a weird, specially hired out fairground plays a surprising role in The Return of the Evil Twin.
Why not?
Seriously, we also go to a sort of southern gothic kind of world, which really has to be seen to be believed.
There's magnolia smoke. It's a lot.
It's everything you could hope for from a return to the sort of the Margot vibe.
That's it. It's like, how do you beat Margot? Two Margos.
Seriously, what more could you want?
Yeah, it's going to be great fun.
So yeah, you will meet Nora in 2024. And until then, we can only say have a very happy holiday season.
Indeed. Whatever you're having yourself, have a lovely time and relax and enjoy yourself if you can. And yeah, we're going to chat to you in the new year.
We will. And don't forget, you can binge your way through Sweet Valley, through the actual Sweet Valley books.
True. Because they're also there.
They're also there. So you might want to prepare yourself for the new year.
Lovely.
But we will see you then. And one last jingle bells for good luck.
I think so.
See you then, everybody.
Thanks for listening and happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Bye.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.